Again, a pleasure to be able and an honor to be able to stand before you once again for a few moments to study from God's holy and divine word. If you are visiting with us, we want you to know that we are happy and honored that you are here and ask that you would linger a few moments after services that we might get better acquainted. We ask you to ask us anything about the services that are done here or anything that is presented in this lesson. If you feel that it's not in accordance with the word of God, we would count you as a dear friend, and I personally, if you would come and talk to us about it, that we might sit with an open Bible and an open mind and come to thus saith the Lord. It's important that our worship service be according to the pattern that we have in the New Testament. If it is not, it's not pleasing to God, and it's not proper for you. If you have any questions, feel free to ask them. We will be more than happy to answer them. This week, our young people, grade school, junior high school, and even college, are returning back to school. Happy for the parents, unhappy for the children. I've been in both situations. Today is a difficult world for our young people. We live in a pressure-packed society. Pressure from friends, pressure from acquaintances, from peers, and from society in general bombard them on a daily basis. Satan is constantly putting pressure on our young people to depart from the straight and narrow path that leads to life. He is constantly doing anything in his power to get them to distrust their parents, to distrust the values that they have always learned, to change the pattern of their life, and believe that the world offers a better course and their friends offer a better course for them to pursue. We need to understand that you will feel pressure. I am very much interested and am very troubled in the plight of young people. I believe it is the future of the Lord's church. And I believe Satan is busy, very active in his pursuit of getting these young souls away from God and into his camp. It's on all fronts. Young people, peer pressure is real. It is not imaginary. It is not something that you are not going to experience. You are going to experience it. You are going to face it. You're going to have to live with it. But you, more importantly, you're going to have to learn to overcome it. Your parents love you. They've tried to raise you in such a way to give you the values and the tools that you'll be able to deal with society. And you'll be able to make good and wholesome decisions. But your parents have other people that will work against them. Most importantly, Satan. And Satan has many adversaries and has many friends. And he's going to do everything in his power to undo everything that you've been taught. Everything that you know to be right, he is going to put pressure in various ways to get you to renounce what you know to be right and to go with the way that the world wants you to go. In this lesson today and this evening, I want to talk about some pressures that you will face, how you can see them coming, and how to avoid them when you do see them come, and how to defeat them when they do come. God is your strength. Never, ever forget that. God is the strength that you need to lean upon in time of trouble. Getting them out in the open, identifying them, and seeing them for what they are can help you overcome them and defeat them. There is a very vital fact that I want you to understand, young people. The devil is real. He is not imaginary. He does not wear a red suit, and he does not have horns on his head and a pitchfork. He is real. He is alive, and he is powerful, and he is crafty, and he is deceptive, and he is going to do everything in his power and everything in his means to get you to denounce God. I want you to take your Bibles and turn to 2 Corinthians, the second chapter, and look at verse number 11. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11. Lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. As soon as you think the devil is not as smart as you think he is, he's got you right where he wants you. Do you know what I believe the devil's greatest power is? Ignorance. Ignorance that he exists, ignorant that he has power, and ignorant that he has a purpose and goal in your life. Make no mistake about this, young people. Satan cares nothing about you. He cares nothing about your life. He cares nothing about what you are or what you might become. He only has one purpose. He only has one goal. And that is to get you out of the camp of God and into the camp of the world. And he's going to do many things in order to get you to do that. So this morning, I want to talk about living, facing, and overcoming pressure. I want to use as a text in Proverbs, the 4th chapter, in verse 14 and verse 15. Proverbs 4, verse 14 and 15. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass it on. This is good sound advice from the wise man Solomon. Avoid the path of the wicked. Avoid the destiny of the wicked. And you can do that if you know what it is and what form it will take. I want to begin this morning by suggesting to you that peer pressure, first of all, can cause us to do things that we know that are wrong. Let me say that again. Peer pressure can cause you to do things that in your heart you know that are wrong. This kind of pressure is not new. It's something that's been along for a long time. In Genesis, the 3rd chapter, Adam fell prey to this type of pressure. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve sinned. First of all, Eve was enticed by the serpent, Satan, and by this temptation, she took of the tree that God forbid that they should eat of. And then she gave to Adam. And all the Bible says in Genesis 3, verse 6, that she gave to Adam, and he did also eat. He gave in to the pressure of his wife. He did that which he knew to be wrong. He knew what God said. He knew what God's instruction was. And yet he went ahead and did that which he was commanded not to do. Adam knew that it was wrong. Go back and read Genesis 2, 15 through 17. He understood God's instruction. He understood his responsibility, but he gave in to the pressure. Peer pressure can cause you to override knowledge and common sense. It amazes me sometimes how stupid we become. Because somehow somebody will convince us to do something that we have always known that is wrong, that we have never wanted to do on our own, something that we would have never turned to and would have never thought of on our own. But somebody comes and suggests it, and we somehow forget everything we learned and everything that we value, and we go after something that we know to be wrong simply because somebody else wants us to do it. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 17. Ephesians 5 verse 17. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. We know what we should do, but then we don't do it. You know, many years ago, well, it hasn't been that many years ago, when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States, his wife Nancy took a great interest in drugs. And they had this little saying that became very popular. Just learn to say no. Just say no. But I've got a better slogan for you. Say no and mean no. When people want you to do something that you know that is wrong, that you've been taught this wrong, that you know biblically is wrong, I don't care who they are. I don't care how good a friend they say they are. When you know that it's wrong, stand your ground. And when you say no, mean no. Don't give in. What can they do to you? Well, they might look at you a little different. They might talk about you a little bit. But that's not going to kill you. That's not going to hurt you. Maintain your ground. Don't give in just because they want you to do it. Don't give up everything you've learned just to fit in. Fit in, you know, just to fit in isn't everything that's cracked up to be. Let me tell you, I know. We need to understand something, young people. We are responsible for the decisions we make. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8, a biblical principle is taught. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man soweth, that will he also reap. For if he sows to the flesh, of the flesh, he will reap corruption. But if he sows to the Spirit, the will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. I want you to know that you're going to sow what you reap. You know, I've known your parents has tried to teach you that. But let me tell you, it didn't originate with them. It originated with God. You're going to reap what you sow. And don't let anybody fool you. I don't care what your friends tell you. I don't care what they try to induce you to do. That when something is wrong, it is wrong. And it's not wrong because your parents said it so. It's wrong because God says it is wrong. And if God says it is wrong, that is reason enough for you to leave it alone. Now let me ask you something. Who knows better what's best for you? God or your friends? Who knows best, your peers, your friends, your associates, your acquaintances? Or does God know what's best for you? Are your friends smarter than your parents? Sometimes young people think so. But you know, in the long run, they find out that they weren't as smart as their parents. Now, you know what? In Genesis chapter 3, in verse 17 through 19, when the punishment came down for the sin, who was punished? Eve, Adam, and the serpent. You know why? Because they all were accountable. Adam was accountable for his action. Eve was accountable for her actions. The serpent was accountable for his action. And you, young friend, you are accountable for your action. Accountability is something that this world is trying to teach our young people to escape. But accountability, you cannot escape. You are accountable creatures. God made you that way. And when you make decisions and when you do things, that's your decision. And you are going to be held accountable by God for it. And you need to understand that. We can't blame society. You can't blame your friends. And you can't blame the pressure. If you give in and you do that which you know to be wrong, you do it because you want to do it. Now, for whatever reason you might have, bottom line, you do it because you want to do it. Now, the pressure is real. It's going to come, and it's going to come in many forms. And you're going to be induced to do things that you have always known to be wrong. And you're going to have to make a decision. Are you going to be your own person, or are you going to cave in? Are you going to do one or the other? You're going to stand your ground and do that which you know to be right, or you're going to do that which your friends want you to do. But you know what? God still blames you. God still holds you accountable. No matter what they did, you are accountable. So, young people, don't give in to the pressure to do things that you know to be wrong. If you know they're wrong, nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. If you know that they're wrong, they're still wrong. And every year you get older, and every year you progress through school, and every year you gain another year in school, doesn't change the wrong in any subject. If it's wrong, it's wrong, period. But you know what? Peer pressure can also cause you to lower your standard of conduct. It can cause you just to renege a little bit, just to lower it a little bit. You know, Aaron gave in to this type of pressure. Remember in Exodus chapter 32? You remember Moses went up on Mount Sinai to get the law, and he was gone for 40 days and 40 nights, we know. And so the children of Israel, as their pattern was, they became restless. And they presented themselves to Aaron and they said, "Hey, we don't know what's happened to Moses. We want you to make gods to go before us." But you know, he knew what God's law said. Go back and read Exodus chapter 20. Idolatry was clearly forbidden by God. They were not to bow down to any graven image. But you know what old Aaron did? He had them bring their gold and their earrings and all this substance, and he had them emboldened of a golden calf. And they began to worship him. But you know, he yielded in to the pressure. He yielded in to lower his standards just to make the people happy. He gave in to the demands of the people. You know, that's so easy to do. It's so easy to give in to demands. You know why? We don't want people not to like us. We don't want people looking at us in a different way. We don't want to stand out. We want to fit in. We want to be one of the crowd. And so it's just easy to go along than to hold your ground. But let me read you a passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21 and 22. Test all things, hold fast to that which is good. abstain from every form of evil. We must hold our ground. We must stand firm on that which we know to be right. Any young person, listen to this, any friend of yours that wants you to lower your standard of conduct is not a friend, they are an enemy. Let me say that again. Any friend, any peer, any acquaintance that will cause you to lower the standards of your conduct is not a friend, he's an enemy to your soul. I don't care how long you've known them. I don't care how good a friend they are. If they want you to change and lower your standard of conduct, they are a danger to your soul. Understand that. You know, Aaron lowered his standards and took part in the idolatry. He allowed the pressure of the Israelites to change what he knew to be right. But you know what? He had a reason. He had a reason. Look at Exodus chapter 32. He had a reason. Everybody's got a reason. Even Aaron had one. In Exodus 32, verse 21. And Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do unto thee that thou hast brought so great a sin upon them? Now I might ask you that question, young person. What can your friend do to you that would cause you to lower your standards of that which you know is right? What did they do to Aaron? Look at verse 32, or in verse 22. And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people that they are set on mischief. For they said unto me, make us a God which will go before us. For as for this Moses, a man that brought us out of the land of Egypt, we want not what has become of him. And I said unto them, whosoever has any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me. Then I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf. Now, you know, when I read this story when I was a little kid, I could never understand how Aaron tried to sell Moses on the ideal that he threw the gold in and it just came out a calf. You ever done that? You ever took a bunch of material and threw it in something and it came out something else? He molded it. It didn't just come out a calf. He molded it into a calf. But I want you to notice, he tried to put the blame on the pressure that the people were exerting against him. Let me tell you something, young people. This is an excuse. It is not a reason. Your friends can put pressure on you, that's real. But they cannot cause you to lower your standard of conduct unless you allow them to do it. You know, one of the things I often young people tell me, we want to be individuals. We want to be our own person. If you want to be your own person, why are you let other people tell you how you're going to live your life? How you let other people determine what you will do and what you won't do? If you want to be an individualist, do what you know to be right. And young ladies and young men, anybody that wants you to lower your standard of conduct, for whatever reason, is an enemy. And he is not a friend, and all that is pressure to get you to change. Can you give in? Oh yeah, you can give in. But if you give in, your friends aren't to blame. Oh, they'll be held accountable for their action. But that won't make any difference between you and your God, because you're going to be held accountable for lowering your standard. I'm here to tell you, your standard of conduct that you have developed, you know what, your standard of conduct, you weren't born with it. You have developed it over a period of time. You have been taught by your parents. You have learned it by observation. You have learned it by what you've seen. You have a standard of conduct. You have a line that you draw. An imaginary line, things that you will do and things that you won't do. Everybody has one. And young people, you have one. You've made those determinations. Now, why would you let somebody else change your mind to lower it? What can they do to make you lower it? They can laugh at you. They can make fun of you. They can isolate you. They can make you feel like you don't fit in, like you're a square peg in a round hole. They can do that. But let me ask you something. So what? Are you afraid to be different? You know, sometimes I think we're afraid to be different. We're afraid to let people know who we are and what we stand for. Why is that? Why are we afraid of that? And not just not young people, but us older people, we have that problem too. We're ashamed of what we are. Why is that? Don't give in. Don't lower your standard of conduct. Hold your ground. You know what is right. Don't change. You know God will be pleased. But you know what? And this kind of goes along with this. You're going to have peer pressure to conform to the world. You know what they want you to do? You don't have to do a lot of things. Just make subtle changes. What they want you to do is conform to the world so you look like everybody else. Turn over to Romans chapter 12. Now we know this passage. You've heard it quoted many times. But notice verse number 2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you may prove that which is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You know what, your friends, and you know what the world wants you to do? It wants you to conform. It wants you to change, that you be just like everybody else. The world wants you to dress like they do. They want you to talk like they do. They want you to act like they do. Why? Because they want you to fit in. They don't want you to stand out. You know what happens when you hold your ground and you don't conform to the world? You know what happens, young people? You make people conscious of what they're doing that is wrong, and they don't like that feeling. And the one way to make sure that they don't have to feel that feeling is to get you to be just like them. Who decides your dress code? Well, I don't have a job, so my mom and dad, really. Well, what do you go after? Are you into these name brand things? Calvin Klein, Nike, Reebok, I mean, you name it. We all have these labels. They had them when I was a kid. They didn't cost as much as they do now, but we had these little designer things. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't think it's wrong that we're designer things. Somebody will see my daughter with a pair of Nike and says, hey, this preacher's contradicting what he's saying. No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with designers. But if we allow the world to dictate what we're going to wear and how we're going to wear it just because everybody else is wearing it, then we better look at it again. Is the reason that we go after a certain type of clothes because everybody else is wearing it? I'll tell you something that's popular today. Baggy pants. I was at Kings Island last week. And I know this young man walking in front of me, his girlfriend had to keep holding his pants up because they were falling down around his legs. I'm not kidding. Now, what's fashionable about that? But you know what? Everybody's doing it. So that's okay. Everybody wears baggy pants. And now they even got some stores that have baggy pants line of clothing. Now, are you wearing baggy pants because you like to, or because that's the trend that's going around? Who decides fashion? Does the world, or are you your own person? Are we going to dress to the latest style, or are we going to dress what is becoming? You know, I'm not going to get into length of hair. I'm not going to get into how high the skirt should be, how tight the slack should be, how tight the jean. I'm not going to get into all that. Common sense and judgment's got to be used here. But I'm saying, do you dress like you want to dress, or do you dress so you fit in? Or do you dress to impress everybody else? Now, you know there's two people that know that. You know it. God knows it. And that's all I'm going to say about it. You should not allow the world to dictate how you're going to dress. In 1 John chapter 2, in verse 15, we're told that we are not to love the world, neither the things that are in the world. We're not to follow the world just because they have a tendency that we need to follow. You know, dressing like the world, Judah felt this pressure. In Leviticus chapter 21, 5 and 6, God told them how they should dress. But you know what? God didn't want his people to look like everybody else. You know, I don't know what this craze is that we've got to look like everybody else. I don't know what's wrong with being different. When I was in high school, and it wasn't that long ago, believe it or not, but when I was in high school, you know what was fashionable? Leather jackets and t-shirts and white t-shirts. That's what was fashionable. But you know what? My parents wouldn't let me wear that stuff. And you know what? I didn't like the leather jackets anyway. But you know what? Everybody wore those type of things. And it was fashionable. And they had these pointed shoes. I always thought they wore that way for a weapon if they wanted to kick somebody. But it was fashionable. But you know, was it wrong to have pointed shoes? Was it wrong to have a leather jacket? No. But if I wore it just so I'd fit in, I think you got to look at that. You know, this is what happened to Israel. Do you remember? In 1 Samuel chapter 8, they come to Samuel. You remember what they wanted? Samuel, we want a king. Why do you want a king? We want to be like the nations all around us. We want a king to go before us in battle. We want a king to go and lead us. And we want to be like everybody else. But you know, this greatly distressed Samuel. And he was very much upset about it. And God says, don't be upset, Samuel. They haven't rejected you. They rejected me as their king. But you remember, if you go back and read 1 Samuel chapter 8, you know what the most compelling part of that story is? Beginning in verse 8 through 18, you know what Samuel does? He gives them an itinerary of where the king will lead them. And you go back and read that account, you're not going to see one positive thing in there. You're not going to see one. Their children and their daughters are going to be sold for slaves. Their land is going to be taken from and given to their king. The king is going to get fat, wealthy, and he's going to do it at their expense. And he's going to use their children and their means to do it. And you know, after Samuel told them all that, and remember, Samuel was a prophet of God. You remember what they said? The most unbelievable statement in the whole thing is in verse 19. After he told them all that, you know what they said? Well, maybe we better reconsider. No. They said, yeah, we want a king. You want it. You got it. And they got it. And you go back and read biblical history, and everything that Samuel told them came to pass just like God said it would. Now, you know what? They didn't care. You know what happened? Common sense went out the window. Good judgment went out the window. And what I'm trying to get you to see is don't allow the world to tell you what you ought to be. Don't let the world tell you how you ought to dress. Don't let the world tell you how you ought to talk. Don't let them tell you how you should act. You're big people. You understand what you should do. You understand your responsibilities. Why you need somebody else telling you. You know one of the things you hate, young people? And you know, you'll never admit this, but I'll tell you. I just don't like my parents telling me what to do. But it doesn't bother you to let the world tell you what to do, does it? I don't understand that. We don't want our parents doing it, but we don't care if friends and society does it. I guess it just depends on who you want to listen to, doesn't it? What I'm getting you to see here, turn to Proverbs chapter 4. Excuse me, chapter 23. I want you to listen. In Proverbs chapter 23, I'm going to read beginning in verse number 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with the winebibbers or the gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunken and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. Why is it that when all of a sudden when the world wants us to do something else and when the world wants us to change what we're doing, we become stupid again and we begin to change our life simply so we can please other people? You know, when I was 18 years old, I thought my parents didn't know very much. I thought they were outdated. I'll use a term that I used. I thought they were out of sync. But you know what? God let me live long enough. About a year and a half later, when I was overseas by myself, you know what I realized? My mom and dad weren't as silly as I thought they were. It wasn't that they got smarter. Keith got smarter. You know why? Because I understood the things that they taught me was for a reason. You know, there's reasons why your parents teach you things. You know that? You know why they do it? Because they love you. Now, does your friends have that much love for you? Who gave you a life? Who puts a roof over your head? Who makes sure you have clothes to wear? Who makes sure you're well fed? Who makes sure you enjoy the life that you live? Is it your friends or is it your parents? You know, I didn't always agree with my parents. Do you always agree with your parents? I know you don't. But you know what? They're just human beings. They make mistakes. We all make them. You ask my daughter, she'll probably give you an itinerary of the ones I've made. I make them. But you know what? I know my children know I love them. I know they know that. And whenever there's a benefit of the doubt, I hope that gives me the benefit. Because your friends don't love you that much. If you think they do, you wait till the fun and the frolic, and when it's gone, they'll be gone. Don't allow other people to allow you to conform to the world. But you know what? Peer pressure can also cause you, believe it or not, to become dishonest. You know, one of the things that my father greatly impressed upon my mind at a very young age is honesty and the value of a good name. Solomon said that a good name is worth more than precious ones. What is the value of a good name? You know, it's easy to be dishonest. All you got to do is lie. All you got to do is be untruthful. All you got to do is be deceptive. And you know, this is so easy for a young person to do. You're going to have pressure to dishonesty. Dishonesty is becoming very popular today. And you know what's sad is? You know what the sad thing about dishonesty is? Probably the biggest perpetrators are the older people. What a horrendous example we set for our children. I've heard parents talking between husband and wife, talking about how they're going to cheat on their taxes in front of their kids. And then they wonder why their kids aren't honest. And they wonder why their kids lie to them. And I've heard other people use things and say things and not understand that their children are watching and listening. You know, young person, you're gonna have people that want you to be dishonest. Everybody cheats on tests. That's not nothing new. That went on when I was in school. It goes on when you're in school. It's easy to cheat. Easy way out. But you know what? When you get out on your own, who are you going to cheat on then? Who's going to help you get through the grade then? You know, the reason why your parents want you to do it yourself is because when you're out in the world, it's just going to be you and the world. And you need to learn how to combat the world on its own terms. And you need to understand that there's not going to be anybody to cheat on then. And you're not helping anybody allowing them to help them to cheat. How are you helping them? You're not helping them. You're just robbing them of what they need to learn for themselves. And what about not getting involved? What about if you go to school or even in college and something happens that you know what happened? You know when it happened, you know how it happened, and you know who did it. And somebody comes to you in authority and says, do you know anything about this? Well, I'm not going to be a rat. I'm not going to be a stool pigeon. But I know what happened, and I've let somebody else suffer before I rat on my friends. Let me tell you something, young people, that's dishonest. Any way you slice it, that's dishonest. That's deceptive. And Colossians 3, verse 9 says that we ought not to lie to one another. That we ought not to lie to one another. And let me tell you something, young people, there's no such thing as an acceptable lie. We call them white lies. We call them lies of convenience. Let me tell you what the world calls it. Situation ethics. There are certain circumstances that it's okay to lie. Let me give you an example. Let's say that somebody wants to know why you don't do a certain thing. They want you to do something and you're not going to do it. And when they ask you why you're not going to do it, well, my mom and dad won't let me do that. When the real reason is that you don't want to do it. That you know it's wrong. And you know it's unacceptable to God. But you don't want them to know that. Because if they know that, they might look at you a little different. That's a lie. That's deception. That's just trying to escape what I might have to do for standing up for what I know to be right. Turn to Romans chapter 12 and look at verse 17 with me. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Let me tell you something, young people. When you begin to be dishonest, and when you begin to lie, you're on your way to a downward spiral that will just get worse. It will not get better. When you tell one lie, you'll have to tell another to cover it up. And it'll become so easy, you won't know the lie from the truth. And then, have you ever heard people, or do you know people that you would say, well, you've got to take what this person says with a grain of salt. or this person, he wouldn't know the truth if it ran into him. How would you like somebody said that about you? You know, I had a young man that worked for me when I was in the military, and he worked for me, and I don't care what story you told, this guy had a better story. And it got to be a joke that people would just make things up to see what this guy would come up with next. And he always did. He never let us down. But you know, that person did not know the truth. He did not have any inkling of the truth. And let me tell you something. This doesn't happen overnight. It's a gradual decline in process. How much is your word worth, young people? How much is your honesty worth? You know what? I'm 43 years old today. And to this day, I would never do anything to bring shame and reproach upon the name that I wear. First of all, to God as a Christian, and second of all, to my mother and father who gave me my name. Why? Not because it's fashionable, because it's right. And all I'm saying is don't allow other people to change your honesty. Stand your ground and always be honest. Always tell the truth. You will be the one that will benefit. Now, you know that there is no way that I'm going to talk about peer pressure and not talk about worldly activities. We're going to begin here, and then we're going to stop, and I'll pick this up tonight. You are going to have peer pressure that you would partake in things that are considered worldly. I am under no illusion that this pressure is not the strongest of all pressure that young people feel. And it's a pressure to conform with what young people do as a general rule. But you know, in Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, the apostles were given pressure by those in religious authority to not teach or preach in the name of Jesus Christ. And after they were warned and chastised, they went back out, and they went out and continued doing that which they knew was right and acceptable to God. They were brought in again, and Peter made the statement in Acts 5, verse 29, we ought to obey God rather than men. And then we also have Galatians chapter 1 and verse 2, verse 10, that tells us that Paul said if he persuaded men, and if he seeked to please men, that he could no longer be a servant of Jesus Christ. We also have passages like 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 3, that we are not to allow the world to conform us and to cause us to partake in things that are worldly in nature. Now, you know something, young people? I was young once, too. Believe it or not, so were your parents. And believe it or not, they face a lot of things that you face. And I want to just talk about one thing this morning, and that's drinking. Drinking. It just greatly gets beside me how our nation can see the danger and eradicated cigarette advertisement from our TV and from billboards in general, and have taken it away because it's a bad influence, but yet can't see the same effect in alcohol. You know all the little cute commercials, the frogs and the bud commercials, you've seen them. When I was a little kid, you know what was a big commercial? Hams Bear. When I was in northern Indiana, they had a little Hams Bear. They used to come on the TV, and he used to throw a ball back to the... I mean, they were cute. He'd be fishing, and the fish would turn to Bud Light. I mean, they're all cute, but it was all for Hams Bear. Today, the big thing is Bud Light. But I'm going to tell you, our children are bombarded on every front to take part in drinking socially. That a little beer never hurt anybody. One glass of wine never hurt anybody. That one beer is not going to change your character. But I'm here to tell you one thing, young people. Not one good thing has ever come from alcohol, and not one good thing will ever come from alcohol. It has caused many young people to never see the fruition of their life because they're now in a cemetery because they didn't believe it could happen to them. Now, I'm going to tell you something, young people. I've talked a lot of alcoholics. And I've even counseled a few. And I'll tell you, without reservation, the one regret that they have in their life, without reservation, the first thing that comes out of their mouth, When did it all begin to go wrong? The first drink I ever took was where I started my down-earned flight. Now, brethren and young people, listen to me very carefully. Do not buy this bill of goods. Well, it can't control me. I'm going to ask you a question. How do you know that? How do you know that alcohol can't control you? This is a realm that you know nothing about, young people. This is a whole different realm. This is something that's new and it looks appealing. But I'm going to tell you something. I can never see the appealment of going out and tying one on. Let me tell you, when I was overseas, I remember people talking about they were going out on Friday night and they were going to go out and drink and have a good time. But later on that night, about 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, I saw them hugging the commode in the latrine. It didn't look that appealing then. But brethren, you say, well, that's excess. Is it? Is it excess? Let me tell you something. You say, I know what you're going to ask me. Well, Brother Greer, what did you do when you were approached with it? Did you ever take a drink? And the answer is yes. I took a drink. I gave in to the pressure, but let me tell you why. I think it's important for you to know why. You know why? I never bought a bottle of beer or a bottle of wine or a bottle of liquor and put it in my room. I never went out on my own to drink. I never did. Never had any desire to do it. You know why I drink? To fit in. So I'd be one of the boys. But isn't that a stupid reason to drink? You know, some of the most embarrassing things I've done in my life, I've done to please other people. How tragic. Why not be a man and stand up and do what I know is right? But let me tell you something about alcohol. Alcohol is depressing. And believe it or not, alcohol is a drug. And alcohol is a legal drug if you're under a certain age, if you're over a certain age. But alcohol, you know what it is? It's an escape of reality. People drink to forget their problems. Never have understood that, because the next morning you still got the problem and you probably got a hangover on top of it. But I want you to turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. And we have some brethren that want to advocate that it's okay to drink as long as you don't go overboard in it, as long as you do it in moderation. But I'm going to tell you, if there was no other passage in the Bible, 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3 ends all arguments. Look at verse 3. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatry. I want you to notice there are three levels of drinking there. Number one is drunkenness, revelries, and drinking parties. Wherever you want to put drinking, it fits in one of those three categories. Whether it's drunkenness, whether it's drinking parties, whether it's social drinking. Whatever you want to put, it's in there and it's condemned as a work of the flesh. Now, if somebody want to tell me that the Bible doesn't condemn drinking in any form, has never studied 1 Peter 4 in the first 5 verses. It is condemned in every form. Why do people drink? Why do young people drink? Makes them feel grown up. What's grown up about getting sick? What's grown up about getting drinking to where your head hurts? To fit in? Is it worth it? Let me tell you something, brother. And let me tell you something, young people. I've attended enough funerals in my life for people's lives who's ended because they got behind the wheel of an automobile after they had a few just to be sociable. I had a good friend in Indiana when I was growing up. He was a good boy, really. And he was raised in a so-called Christian home. And he went out one night. This was when he was a junior in high school. He went out one night, and they were having a party, and there was beer there. And so, you know, oh, go ahead. One beer's not going to kill you. One beer's not going to hurt you. It's not going to turn you into an alcoholic. Go ahead, one beer. This, what are you, ashamed? You're man of mobs. Go ahead and drink one beer. And they began to rib him a little. And so he took one. And then he took another one. And then he took another one. And by the time he graduated from high school as a senior, he was up to a case a day. 18 years old. Drinking a case of beer a day. His parents didn't drink. Didn't have it in the house. None of his near friends, none of his family drank. But you know what? It got a hold of him. He didn't let go of it. And he said, well, that won't happen to me. Let me ask you something. How do you know, man? How do you know alcohol won't have that effect upon you? Let me tell you something. You don't know. And you don't know. And my question to you is very simple. Are you willing to take the risk? Brethren, I don't know if any of you have ever seen somebody die from cirrhosis of the liver. I don't even know how to describe it. The pain is excruciating. And it's such a slow death. And I've seen life break homes. I've seen it ruin people's marriages. I've seen it destroy children. I've seen it destroy Christian families. I've seen alcohol do all of that. And you know what? You know what the number one killer in our country is today? It's not cancer. Not heart attacks. Car accidents. And the number one contributing factor is alcohol. I'm going to ask you a question. What is appealing about that? Why do young people want other young people to drink? Let me ask you something. Do they care about you? Do they care about that you might get addicted to this stuff? Do they care about what effect it has on your life? Not a bit. All they want you to do is to do it to fit in. The question I have for young people is very simple. Do you want to fit in that bad? Do you want to fit in that bad that you ruined everything that you have worked your life for? You know, forget what mom and dad say for me. Forget what they've always tried to tell you. Let's think about God's perspective. God says it's harmful to you. I want to read one passage of scripture as we bring this part of the lesson to the close. Turn to Proverbs chapter 20. If you don't remember anything I said about drinking this morning, please remember the words of Solomon in Proverbs chapter 20 and verse number 1. And remember that he wrote by the inspiration of God. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1. Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. It is not wise to drink.